Now, it's an old complaint about the British economy. Why don't we make things anymore? We used to have a world-beating car industry. We used to make textiles that were exported all over the world. Nowadays, it sometimes feels like just about everything's made in China or elsewhere. But one area where Britain does still lead the international pack is in the space industry. This country has made a great success of building satellites, rocket parts and other more glamorous bits of machinery destined for the stars. The UK now has a 6% share of the global market in space products, and the government's convinced we can improve on this figure. But for all its glamour, can the manufacture of space technology really make a significant contribution to the British economy? Paul Moss reports.
It's the first stage of a very long journey, from the Earth to Mars, beginning in Stevenage. We're in a remarkably ordinary-looking warehouse on the outskirts of an industrial estate, where a team of engineers are testing the ExoMars rover. This six-wheeled vehicle will eventually be carried by rocket to the surface of Mars, where it will crawl around, digging up the Martian soil, searching for signs of life. It's the Hertfordshire-based company Astrium that's won the contract to build the rover, and Paul Meacham is the man responsible for getting it ready.
There are lots of challenges with a mission like this. One of the main ones is the dust environment. You have to very carefully design your rover such that the dust can't get in and jam mechanisms and so on. Then you have the thermal variation. Nighttime temperatures will drop to something like minus 130 degrees centigrade. It's quite incredible to think that something I worked on will one day be on the surface of Mars.
3, 2, unité, feu.
It's not just about space exploration. The bread and butter work of a company like Astrium is manufacturing satellites and helping to launch them for telecommunication and military use. This is big business, and a business that so far seems to be defying the recession. According to analysts, Britain's contribution to the space industry has been growing at 10% a year. That's partly a matter of lucky timing, according to Astrium's site director, Bob Graham.
Telecommunications spacecraft, they're coming towards the end of life. They need renewing. That's created a demand. There is greater demand for broadband, for space, for direct home TV. So all of that leads to space contributing £9 billion per year to the economy within the UK.
Why is it, do you think, that Britain is getting a lot of contracts to build these spacecraft? Let's be honest, we are not very good at building, I don't know, Hoovers or washing machines, and yet we're able to make equipment that's going to go into outer space.
What we're seeing is the result of investment from the 70s, where a very deliberate decision was taken that we would focus on telecommunications spacecraft. That has led to a situation of where the products that we produce are fully recognised across the world as high quality and reliability.
We are now at a watershed where space is transitioning.
All that past investment is now being reinforced. In a speech at the Royal Society last November, the Chancellor, George Osborne, promised that his government would provide public funding for research, training and new facilities for space technology.
Our ambition is to have a £30 billion industry by the 2030s. And the private sector.
This is all part of the government's promise to rebalance the British economy, to develop manufacturing rather than focusing too exclusively on services or the financial sector. But some critics believe that George Osborne and his colleagues have become rather too dazzled by space technology and what it offers. John Bryson is Professor of Enterprise and Competitiveness at Birmingham University. He's something of a space sceptic.
Space is sexy. Space is the Doctor Who or the Star Trek part of our economic strategy, but it's only a very small part of our manufacturing economy. Governments can't look into the future. They don't know where the new technological breakthroughs are going to be. In 10 years' time, we may not need satellites. We may have a new technology that removes the need for satellites from our economy and from our societies. If that were to happen, we would have wasted a significant amount of investment into that particular sector.
It is the heart of Britain's sexy, futuristic space research. The Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, just outside Didcot in Oxfordshire. On the day I showed up, they were testing out a new radio telescope. This laboratory places an emphasis on turning its research into business, taking ideas from pure science and giving them a marketable application in space. Yet here too there's concern about the future for this ambition, and for an all-too-familiar reason. According to the laboratory's director, Richard Holdaway, this country still isn't producing enough scientists or enough engineers to keep our space missions on course for the stars.
If you compare us with China, in this country we graduate a couple of thousand high-quality engineers in our university every year. China graduates 200,000. And in a sense it's getting worse because we're growing the industry on the space side, and therefore we need more and more.
You do get a sense of that need when you look at the sheer range of projects underway at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory. Paul Vernon helps run business development here and was keen to emphasise that industrial projects designed for use in space can end up having the most surprising uses here on Earth, which again means more growth opportunities for the British economy. He gave me a recent example.
We have one company which is developing some technology which was originally developed for the Rosetta mission, which is currently heading across the cosmos to rendezvous with the comet. The space probe used very tiny needles to produce an electric field, and they've been able to turn that into a device for delivering vaccines. So I'd actually argue that space technology isn't niche at all. That's real world-changing stuff.
Well, I've come now to the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills, the government office behind Britain's investment in space technology, and indeed the office of David Willetts, Minister for Universities and Science. Mr. Willetts has shown a lot of personal enthusiasm for space. He's made it very much his own ambition to see this country take a greater share of the market when it comes to winning space industry contracts. And David Willetts is another who insists that space is not some small niche area of manufacturing.
Well, certainly the automotive sector is far bigger, but the space sector is growing at roughly the same speed as the Chinese economy, and I think in the future it'll be a very important part of our economy. This is indeed a high-tech sector. 80% of the employees in the space sector are graduates, but, you know, that's a good thing. This is the future of our economy, these high-tech jobs.
We do see again and again a problem where Britain will invent something and then it's other people who go on to capitalise on it, most famously the internet. A British person invented it, but none of the big internet companies now are British. What's to say we won't make all this innovation in space and then watch other countries, I don't know, Germany or China, then go on and create the big businesses for it?
Well, you've put your finger on the crucial challenge, and indeed what I try to do as science minister is always get the scientists to think about the potential commercial applications of what they do and to get businesses to understand how they can harness the quality of our scientific research. So, yes, that is a risk, but we can overcome it. And we're already overcoming it in the space sector where we have successful commercial enterprises.
Another criticism that's been made is that governments just shouldn't be in the position of, to use that phrase, picking winners. You've decided as a government that space is the future. You're going to throw some money and some effort at it. They'll say that governments just don't have a very good record of doing this.
Governments certainly shouldn't be writing checks to particular companies that they're trying to rescue, as happened notoriously in the 1970s. But we're talking about something very different here. We're talking about supporting scientific research and general technologies which are not yet at the stage that they can be commercialised. We have a system where the level of public support is actually quite modest still, but we have very big and successful commercial players.
One thing which many companies say is holding them back from that bright future is the simple fact, once again, we don't have enough trained scientists, trained engineers. It's an old complaint, but one I'm still hearing.
Well, we do need, we're always looking for more scientists and technicians. But this is the virtuous circle we can get into. One of the other arguments for space is what in America they identify as the Apollo effect. It was the excitement around the lunar missions that got a whole generation of young Americans to study science and technology at college and university. And I think the excitement of space gets young people to study them at A-level and college and university. And in turn, therefore, when people see satellite images coming back from the solar system, they know there's British technology and British science involved. And I think it's a legitimate source of national pride and, of course, commercial opportunity.
David Willetts there, Minister of State for Universities and Science, talking to Paul Moss.